Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're tuning into another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. Today is May the 5th, 2014. And yes, it is Cinco de Mayo, so I hope everyone is out there getting their margarita drink on and having fun. Fortunately, I can't. I have to go to work today, so anyhow, I'm thanking you for just tuning in. Thank you for hitting up my Facebook fan page. I now have a voicemail, so if you don't leave comments here or call in, you can leave comments on the voicemail, and I will definitely check them out. And I am looking for someone who wants to win a Naked Wine voucher for $100. You get a $100 discount off nakedwines.com. So if you are that person, please respond. I already responded to two people, and they have not responded back. I am very serious about this. This is not a spam. It's not a scam. Spam, scam. But I hope that you do retrieve it. But today on the show, we always talk about marriage, and it takes so much time to get prepared for the wedding. We got to spend our money on the dress, the bride, the bridesmaids, the best man. You got to do the cake, the food. It's a lot that goes into a wedding. And the main factor of it is trying to keep it together. When you're on the verge of wanting easy, it won't work out. But if you're in it for the long run, it won't always be easy either. You know, it's funny that way. Anything that you want is hard work, but trying to keep it together is another thing as well. And here to explain it all is Mr. Hogan Hillen. He is the author of When Divorce Do Us Part. We always hear death do us part, but sometimes it just don't make it that far. And how are you doing today, Hogan?
Hey, Technisha, I'm doing great. Thank you for an opportunity to share the bright side of divorce.
Whoa, you're so welcome. As I was saying, it looks like silver and gold, like the gospel song says. Silver and gold, but it's not always that way when you're marrying. I mean, it's work, though, because it'll be 9 years for me. It'll be 9 years for me next month. It's work. No one said it was easy. Hogan, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, it seems like it's so hard, though, when you're divorced, when you're getting ready to divorce. Isn't that just as much money? When you're divorcing, don't you have to get the lawyers and everything?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of financial aspects to it. But, you know, the emotional pain is hard to define because it's an individual thing. But to confirm what you said, I mean, when two people fall in love, it's a beautiful thing. And if you can keep it together and make it work, it's even more beautiful. But, you know, the reality of life is that when two people fall out of love, it's devastating, but there is hope for a future life. And that's the reason I wrote the book. And I just want to start by saying that there are legitimate reasons a spouse should divorce. I mean, psychologists are saying now you shouldn't stay married just for the children, and that there are legitimate reasons. And some of those are, one, fall out of love. I mean, there are some spouses that just, for whatever reason they can't explain, they're no longer in love with this person. So there's really no judgment call there. One spouse could lose their value system, which was the case with my marriage. Infidelity was also part of the reason I left. But the main reason is the circle of trust. When that's broken in some shape or form, it's very difficult to stay in the marriage. And then another good reason is there are spouses out there that have been diagnosed with either with alcoholism, drug addiction, or mental condition. And when you're in a marriage, you want the best from another person. And if you're not getting that, you shouldn't lower your standards. I mean, it's really a red flag to say that. Either try to work to save the marriage. If that doesn't work, then you really need to leave.
Right. It seems like it's too hard to try to save it. If it's not going to work, it's just not going to work. And sometimes when you're in a marriage, it's not your soulmate. You know, they always say find somebody who's really going to be on the same connection with you spiritually, physically, and mentally, and it doesn't always work that way. And as you were saying before, a lot of people like to stay in a marriage because of the children, and that's not healthy for them either. I see a lot of these celebrities now, and they're co-parenting. He goes his way, she goes her way, but the child always will be taken care of, but you just won't be together. And I don't know if that's easy or not for the children, but then that's something that you have to sit down with them and explain, look, mommy and daddy just not working, but we still love you too.
Well, I think a lot of that, how it affects the children is really based on how the spouses behave towards each other. And that's
right.
Part of the reason why I wrote this book is regardless of who is at fault or who's doing what, and I'll delve more into it as the interview goes, is, you know, the main thing that I focus on this book is that I hold myself accountable for my actions. I cannot control my ex-spouse's behavior. And, you know, there's just no reason to justify behaving inappropriately just because your ex-spouse is behaving inappropriately through the court proceedings. But before we go on, let me just share just some important facts that your listeners really need to know before they even consider picking up my book. I hope they buy and read it because I think they'll benefit from it. But just some important facts. One is the book is about my successful divorce process story, and it included making a lot of unconventional choices. And the book was written for people who would like to become a victor and not a victim of divorce. And secondly, I filed for divorce because my ex-wife broke the circle of trust, which she admitted to and apologized for a year after the final decree. And the information that I give in the book about my ex-spouse is really limited, but it was valuable to the book. And I want people to know that the reason I put those in was because that you needed to know what went on. And there are just merely true accounts of the choices she made. And it's not a judgment call on her. I mean, she's been very gracious through the whole divorce process, understood the choices she made, accepted the consequences of that, and was very amicable throughout the divorce with me.
Well, see, that's good. You had to, like, two reasonable adults. Nobody didn't do all the bad bashing, one another slandering each other names out there in the street. Like, most of them, oh, he's no good, he's this and that. She's all, oh, don't try that now.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't stand when
I will say, my ex-wife did start out with that behavior. I mean, behavior was going on in the marriage. She did start out with inappropriate behavior during the divorce proceedings. But because I didn't react to it, she started changing her behavior.
Good. See, somebody had to be the adult in that. Okay. Yeah, because it always end up being that way. You're doing so good. You weren't talking about each other then, but as soon as you break up, oh, well, I'm every name in the book now. Names I never even heard of. Like, we going there? Be on Facebook, bash each other. Like, come on now. You really want to. So I'm glad that she did decide to change her ways.
It was healthier for her, too. I mean, for her to really realize that she needed to make those behavioral changes, which some of it was going on during the marriage.
Well, how long had you and her been married before you even divorced?
We were married for 25 years, and the last 10 years were touch and go. I tried to convince her to go to therapy. And
right.
What was interesting, again, it's so unconventional. I mean, typically it's the guy that doesn't want to go to get help. And
right.
this was just the reverse. And I will tell you, going to therapy really, really helped me. I mean, I probably should have divorced a lot earlier, but there were other circumstances involved why I didn't. I was trying to save the marriage. One was fear.
Okay.
Et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, you're putting up all these fears, and that's part of this book. And one of the chapters is about accepting divorce as a good decision. A lot of people feel guilty because, especially in my case, I was the person that filed for divorce. And it's just as painful for me that it was as to be being dumped. So that was another thing that prolonged the marriage a little bit.
Oh, you good, Hogan, because a lot of men would have said, bump this, I'm moving on, you have a good life. What Chris Brown say? Deuces. but you did. You try to make it right. And most men are not like that. Someone will not just stay that long in the relationship.
I tried to make it right for myself because I realized, look, if I'm gonna file divorce, mm-hmm. I have to feel good about that decision because I feel right now, even though after I filed for divorce, I walked away knowing I did everything possible to save that marriage.
Right.
And that's great peace of mind for me to get me to move on.
Sound like you bled your last sweat and your tears. So what actually do you think killed it, though, the whole marriage? Was it the communication, not listening to each other, sometimes one work more than the other?
No, you know, it wasn't really about the parental differences. I mean, I could live with that. I think communication was part of it. I mean, she was an introvert. She passive aggressive behavior. The fact that she didn't want to go to therapy, that was a communication problem. But it really boiled down to circle of trust. And my ex-wife has admitted to this. She made up stories about me. She lied to me, and it wasn't just one occasion. I mean, these were several situations where it was just building and bigger building, and one little small lie led to a bigger lie and a bigger one. And then she started taking money out of my joint account without me knowing it. From her perspective, it wasn't stealing. But in my book, that's stealing. So, you know, that whole, again, honesty thing, there was just no honesty anymore. I saw her value system go down. She didn't care anymore. And so it really boiled down to that whole circle of trust. I just felt that I couldn't go through a marriage where there was no honesty anymore. So that's why I filed for divorce.
Why? I don't blame you. I mean, how much do you think a person could tolerate? And I love my husband, but see, that's why I'm not doing a joint account. I don't have time for that because I know how he is. He likes mm-hmm. to spend
money. Let's just take the one main reason why couples divorce. It's sexual infidelity. And
why?
You know, how many times are you going to put up with your spouse who has had 3 affairs or 4 or 5? You know, I know some people who've had 10 affairs. I mean, when does it end? You know?
Exactly. I'm not going to put up with too many times now because somebody's going to have to leave. Either you can leave freely. Well, we could go through the life insurance. Look, I'm sorry to say it like this. We can go through the life insurance. Which way you want it? Because I can get my money early. I don't want to take you out. But, but I tell you, you just got to be honest all the way in the relationship if you're going to do that. I mean, I don't blame you, though. You can't go behind somebody's back and think they're not going to question you. I don't care if we are married.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as far as it goes with children, how many children did you have at the time while this was going on?
3 boys.
Okay.
And in my case, the oldest was 18.
Okay.
So the youngest was 18. Didn't have to deal with the young children aspect part of it. But my book is really more, there's so many other books about divorce and dealing with children. You know, the focus of my book really is about moving forward. There's so many people that feel so emotionally paralyzed that they can't make the decisions to move forward because they're focusing so much on their ex-spouse's behavior and they're reacting to what their ex-spouse is doing or not doing. What I find interesting is that a lot of people who go through the divorce process take the same behaviors they had while they were in a marriage, which is the reason why they were divorcing.
Exactly.
And carrying it over into the divorce proceedings. And what's that definition of insanity is doing the same things and expecting a different result. Well, when you go through the divorce process, you know, divorce is just a process. It's not a word to describe who you are as a person. And what you have to understand, it's a process, and then you have to change your behavior. If you're not getting the results you want, then don't say it's your ex-spouse's fault. You're
mm-hmm.
contributing to the behavior if you're not changing it.
Right. You're the problem. And a lot of people, I call them kind of people, they're needy. They want to leave off on you. Even in a relationship, they just like your best friend. They want to that best friend, you know them kind of Hogan want to hold on to you all day long, act like they just can't. Mm-hmm. It's all about them, and that's how most of the relationships are. They think it's all about them. They don't want to change. Oh, I want to go out party with my girls all day and night. Okay, but you got to be at home at a certain time. You know your man at home, your children at home, but you still want to party. It don't work like that, and people still sometimes be in that mind frame, oh, I'm living in a single world. No. You're living in a marriage world now. Your days apart is over.
Let me give you an example of the accountability. I mean, again, whether you file for divorce or whether you're the person that received the divorce papers, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's some people that have said to me, well, I feel like a victim. I go like, well, you have a decision to be a victim or a victor, and more importantly, if you're in a divorce, you're not the only victim. The person who filed for divorce is a victim of divorce. The kids are a divorce. The people around you are a victim of divorce. So to isolate yourself and say, I'm the only victim, is craziness. And so basically it's up to you about what's your attitude going to be through the divorce. So here's an example that kind of really gets to the heart of the matter and can help people maybe identify with what I'm trying to convince them to do. As I explained earlier, my ex-wife was taking money out of the joint account without me knowing. And the dollar amount, even though it was thousands of dollars, the amount is irrelevant. The fact that she did it is relevant because the circle of trust was broken. So I go to therapy. And again, this is not a judgment call on my therapist. He was excellent. And, sometimes therapists or people give you advice. Again, it goes back to accountability. You make a decision, you accept the consequence. So he was aware of my wife's financial infidelity, and he said, are you going to file for divorce? And I said, yes. He goes, well, before you file for divorce, what you need to do is start taking money out of your joint account without your wife knowing it, because you have limited funds and you're going to need money for attorney's fees and for your future financial matters.
Right.
And I didn't blink an eye, and I said, I'm not going to do that. And he was shocked because there are other couples that are doing that, because I've heard of that. And I said, no, I said, I'm not going to participate in behavior that I don't approve of. And if I'm accusing her of stealing money, then I'm doing the same thing. So I kept my integrity. My ex-wife was going to take everything from me, but she wasn't going to take my integrity. So I go through the divorce. I file for divorce. We go appear in front of the judge. And lo and behold, my ex-wife's attorney is accusing me of hiding money. Well, guess what? I didn't. They couldn't find it because I didn't do it. So she's making these accusations in front of the judge. The moment the judge figured out that I held on to my integrity, that I did not steal money, that I was rolling the dice here on the justice system to see that, the whole tone of the court proceedings from that point on changed.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end result, I came out better emotionally and financially.
Right.
Imagine if I would have hidden money, and then all of a sudden it would have been that tit for tat thing going all the way through the divorce process.
Right.
And the fact that I kept my integrity, forced my ex-wife to change her behavior because she was finally realized. She go, oh my God. Hogan was honest. He wasn't taking any money out. I look like an idiot now. Because I asked for the financial statements from her attorney, and the last thing that she wanted was the judge looking at those financial statements.
See, that's a good thing, though, see, like you said, because if you would have went in there any other kind of way, acted like an abusive man or anything, they would have said, no, sir, she would have won that case. But see, they saw the goodness in you. Because a lot of women sometimes do think that, oh, I'm the woman. They just automatically going to just, the judge going to be in my favor. No. No, he's not going to be in your favor.
I talk to a lot of dads, and it's very hard for them to control their emotions. They get so angry and upset at what their ex-spouse is doing that they do they have the knee-jerk response, and they get angry. Well, one of the things I'm trying to tell them is, there's no dispute that the court system is divorce and women, I mean, mom and women bias. But you can change that by your behavior. Think about this. How many guys go stand in front of the judge and are calling the ex-spouse's names and yelling and screaming, that when I walked in and I kept my composure, do you think the judge noticed that? Yeah, because the guys, most of the guys that came in before were yelling and screaming and acting like idiots. So all of a sudden, if you come walking in there with this composed, appropriate behavior, the judge is going to give you more clout. And it was evidence, and that's why I wrote this book, was because my strategies have proven to be effective.
Right. Well, you know what? I'm glad it worked out for you, Hogan, and especially with you having children, and they understood, they were old enough to actually know what was going on. But, you know, to me, divorce is often viewed as a detriment to a marriage. What did you do to dispel the negative perception that often surrounds divorce?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great question. It was really hard for me to make the decision because this negative image we have of divorce, as I mentioned earlier, we kind of look at divorce as a scarlet letter. And I said, you know, why are we doing this? I actually looked up the definition of divorce, and it's a verb and a noun. It's not something to describe who the person is. And one of the things that I did was I didn't fall into that conventional mindset, and I just said, you know, wait a second. I am not a divorced person. I'm a single person now, okay? And I, whenever I filled out an application for whatever it is, whether it's for medical or looking for a job, they always put divorce, a box with the divorce on there. And, you know, you can't control what's on that application, but you can. What I say is go through the divorce process with integrity. It's like you're playing a mental game with yourself. So mm-hmm. when I look at these boxes and see divorce and single, I check the single box. I don't tell people I'm divorced, especially after the divorce process, you know, because once the divorce is over, it's over. You're now a single person. You're not divorced for the rest of your life.
Okay. So it's almost like saying don't claim that you're divorced at all?
Well, as you're going through the divorce process, I mean, again, it's a process and understanding that if you want to say that you're going through a divorce, I think it's more kind of using different languages to help educate people because, hey, the truth is when you say you file for a divorce or when you're going through a divorce or when you were served the papers, what happens is you lose half your friends. And one of the reasons you lose half your friends is because nobody wants to get caught up in the middle because they're afraid of divorce. And some people think it's even contagious that if you talk to a divorced person, then, you know, you're going to get a divorce. People just don't know how to deal with it. So what you have to do is set a mind frame for yourself so that people feed off of your positive energy. And, yeah, you're affected by the divorce, but not in the way that you're going to carry it with you. Because the more you carry on your back, the more animosity you're going to have against your ex-spouse. And so you can say, I'm going through the divorce process. And then once the divorce is over, you can. If somebody says, oh, you're divorced, I go, no, the divorce is over. I'm not divorced anymore. That's just the process. I'm single now and I'm available. Because you want to move on. And just because, again, the reason for the title, How to Live and Love Again, is because you don't want to go through life after you've gone through a divorce thinking that you can't meet someone else. Why do that to yourself? And so many people that we've talked to in the divorce community say, oh, well, you know, my ex-spouse was this and this. I'm not going to – who wants to be married to a man or a woman? You know, now you're – one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch.
Well, I mean, it's hard for people to be willing to share those type of feelings with anybody else or even to get over, like you said, it's the fear of not being wanted by somebody else. But you have to, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, basically whatever you're dealing with, either externally or internally, you just need to develop those certain skills to help you in your transition to a new life.
Right, well, let me ask you, I mean, you're caught in a very difficult situation because of the pressure society puts on staying married, okay? So, but do you stay in an unhealthy marriage? I mean, is that life going to be great for you? How do you spell relief? You know, I jokingly say, how do you spell relief from an unhealthy marriage? D-I-V-O-R-C-E. I mean, that's the only alternative you have. I mean, why do you want to stay, surround yourself with dysfunctional people for the rest of your life?
Right. And I mean, and you're right, because being in an unhealthy marriage, that breaks you on it down. But to me, when you get out of divorce, you got to believe that you can actually heal. And I think that's when spirituality plays a part in this too. Because regardless of what you're going through, God always works out a way for you. So you have to have that faith that you can heal, that you can move on. It's a moving process. It takes one step at a time. It's not going to be easy, and you have to start with the baby steps. And then soon you will be moving forward, doing leaps and all these different bounds, but you got to take it slow. Nobody didn't say once you divorce, oh, let me go out there and get the next person. No, it doesn't work like that. Make it slow.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you with the spiritual aspect of it. I mean, you have to have a lot, not only a lot of faith in God, but you have to have a lot of faith in yourself to be able to make the right decisions. And I think part of the reason that people are getting paralyzed, which I point out in the book, is in some ways they rely too much on God. When they need to start looking about them within themselves. And the one point I make is that, you know, God gave humans incredible power that they don't even utilize, and that's the power of choice. And the way God gave you that kind of power was he said to you, you can either choose to bring me into your heart and embrace me or not bring you into your heart. What incredible power that is, that God lets you decide whether you want to accept him or not. So he gave you incredible power of choice, the choice to keep your integrity, the choice to conduct yourself in a very appropriate manner through the whole divorce proceedings. So if you're choosing to make decisions, you have to accept the consequences of that. If you're making bad decisions, then you have to start talking about, well, I'm making bad decisions here. Then you have to look at yourself and say, okay, well, you know what? I'm contributing to these problems, so now I have to look at self-growth. And that's very difficult for a lot of people to do, is to look at the mirror and go, like, you know what, I need to change my behavior. And God can do that and help you if you believe in him, but where the difference is in my book is that I take it to a new level and try to teach you how to apply that and make the right choices. It's so hard to change a behavior that you were in before. It's hard to break old habits. I try to help you break old habits and create new habits for success in the future.
Well, I'm happy that you do have this book out. I mean, for all of the divorcees out there or who haven't divorced yet, probably discussing about it, I mean, when you get to that point, to me, I mean, like for everything else in life, one day you're going to look back and realize that all those sorrows and all those challenges that you had to go through and experience during your divorce, you gave way to a greatest accomplishment. Because sometimes you don't know what God has in store for you. You might have to get the other person out of the way in order to be happy or in order for them to be happy. You never know. I mean, it's a plan. We don't know what the plan is down here. Only God knows that. But I'm glad that you do have this book out. I mean, it will help people out here. Hogan, if you don't mind, I know it's not the end of the show, but give people your website where they can get your book.
Yes, my website address is Hoganhealing.com. So it's my name, .com. And so people don't get confused. I've written five other books on parenting, and I wrote this book on divorce because people had asked me, why I was so successful with my divorce, and I realized it was an idea for a book. And so when you go on the site, it'll say The Dad Guru, but navigate through the website, and it'll get you a link to the book. I believe there's a link on the website there to Amazon.com where you can purchase the book directly, and you can also purchase the book at Barnes & Noble. And I'm also available for speaking engagements.
Well, good, because that's what we might need. We might need to have you come down here in Atlanta and give some seminars. But Before we go on commercial break, I wanted to ask this too, Hogan. It sounds like it's just so good to have a divorce. So what actually makes divorce good? I mean, because it seems hurtful, like you said in the beginning. You're losing everything. This person is leaving your life.
And what was the question again?
What's good about divorce?
You know, there's really nothing good about divorce. I would have loved to stay in the marriage, but it just, you know, when one other spouse is not putting the work in, you're kind of left with the only option available. And it's back to that whole saying, you know, you got to take the cards that are dealt you. And, you know, there are other challenges that people go through in life other than divorce. I mean, I tell people, take a look back at, you know, what other challenges did you overcome learn adversity, and you wind up being successful. I mean, in my case, I had a child with special needs, and you know, they're in the families that have child with special needs, the divorce rate is sky high. And, you know, what was it about me that I was able to overcome that challenge? Did I want a child with special needs in my life? No. Did I want a divorce? No. But I'm going to take lemonade out of lemon. It's all about attitude. And I just said, you know, divorce, although it's not a good thing to divorce, what about life after divorce? Can I make that better? And my answer for me at the time was, yeah, I can make it better than my unhealthy marriage, because I already tried to make my unhealthy marriage better, and I couldn't. And so I decided, you know what, I'm not going to buy into this whole idea that I'm supposed to feel miserable just because I'm divorced. I just decided to turn that around and said, you know what, I'm not going to buy into that. I'm going to make a brighter future for myself. And again, the facts, based on, I've been divorced for over 2.5 years now. I'm much happier now than I was 2.5 years ago because of the choices I made.
And that's how you're supposed to be. You're not supposed to be all going around soaking and want to kill yourself.
No,
you did. Yeah, I think you made the right move, though, and you sound like you're so happy, and that's a good thing. And what we're going to do, we're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to be back with Hogan Hill, and we're going to talk more about his book, When Divorce Do Us Apart. When Divorce Do Us Part. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
There's only one station that will keep you happy. Blog Talk Radio. We're taking more of your calls at 347-426-3751. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this commercial break.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey, the dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back with Hogan Healing, and we're on here talking about divorce. It's not the prettiest word in the dictionary, but things happen. That's life. It happens. Life is full of chocolate, and you never know what you're going to get, like Forrest Gump says. But, Hogan, this is what I want to ask, because we left off with divorce is not always good, but it works out best for you sometimes in the situation. But in your book, it's another aspect of it that is different, is the first 10 chapters, they're about emotional and spiritual healing, and the last 10 chapters are about what you describe as behavioral healing. Could you elaborate on both?
Yeah, I think I touched a little bit about it when we talked about the spiritual aspect. I think it's important that every person, especially the guys, you got to start attending these divorce workshops, and this puts part of the healing process, you know, attend therapy, you know, it puts your ego aside. Not only that, a lot of these divorce workshops, it's usually 80-20 women. You know, as a man, you're going there for yourself, but go there to support other men, because the 20% feel so lonely and outnumbered. A lot of times the guys that attend leave because they're outnumbered. So you're going there to help the other guys as well. But you need to have that spiritual healing. You need to go there and whatever religion, whatever belief you have to have that spiritual concept because you need that for your own self-esteem, your own self-growth. The last 10 chapters are more about how are you going to apply that to everyday decisions that you have to make where you have to separate the emotions of what you're going through. Because the spiritual part of you is only going to get you so far. How you act among your family and friends and how you act in front of the judge are two different things. I mean, you know, you could tell the judge that you believe in God, but he's going to look at how you're behaving and how you're acting and are you filling paperwork in time? Are you trying to are you lying to him, et cetera, et cetera? But even the decisions that you're making on a personal level are going to be what you need to do. And so the last 10 chapters, for example, like treat divorce like a business. People would look at me and go, how can you do that? And again, a lot of if you read through the book, there are a lot of unconventional choices I made that made me successful throughout the divorce and after divorce. So if I'm giving you these suggestions, you know, they sound unconventional, they are. And so, and some of the other thing is accentuate the positive. I mean, I had people coming up to me, how come you're so positive? I go, like, am I supposed to feel miserable about this?
Right.
I'm sorry?
I was agreeing with you, right? You're not supposed to feel miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, people around you make you sound like you feel miserable or they either, even look at you going, like, wondering if you caused a divorce. And I go, people get so judgmental just because of the word. You know, like in my case, because my ex-wife had made up all these stories, when I filed for a divorce, everybody was pointing the finger at me. I mean, allegiance went all the way to my ex-wife. I'm sitting here on an island all by myself with no emotional support because people already made judgment calls on me. I mean, even to the point where I got a nasty letter from one of her friends accusing me of stuff. I could have got angry at this person, but I didn't, because what I realized, again, back to I'm controlling my behavior, is that I realized this person was making a judgment call based on misinformation person got from my ex-wife.
Right.
So I didn't react to it. So, you know, one of the most interesting things I discovered about myself after I filed for divorce was how many dysfunctional people I allowed to be in my life during my marriage. And it wasn't just my ex-wife. It was her friends, my relatives. One of the chapters I have here is Emancipate Your Ties to Dysfunctional People, and that's where I talk about accountability, about the marriage. It's called, you know, I allowed those people to be in my life, and I allowed them to affect the way I behaved. So what I did during the divorce process, I emancipated myself from the dysfunctional people, either physically or mentally. But the relatives, you really can't. I mean, you still have to meet them and be cordial. But what you do is you block yourself out mentally. And what I mean by that, when someone makes a comment to relatives, just don't reply to it. It doesn't require a response, whether it's verbal, by email, or by telephone message, whatever. Don't let them get your goat. Stay focused on what you need to do to make your life better.
Right. I agree with you always. This is some ways to cope with divorce, and it helps too. You got to be
It's also not an easy thing to do, because when you start emancipating yourself from dysfunctional people, that means you're decreasing the amount of the people in your social circle. And I have a remedy for that. It's chapter 14 is Emancipate Your Ties to Dysfunctional People. Chapter 15 is Network with Successful People. And I would caution people that go through the divorce process is when you go to the divorce workshop, there are a lot of people that are dysfunctional that are acting like victims. There are a few people in there, like I was, who are not dysfunctional, who want to move on with their life. The tendency is to get sucked in and start hanging out with the other people that are acting like victims. You buy into that, and then you're saying, oh, you know, my life is miserable. Well, you choose to hang around with those functional people. There are successful people out there. So what I did was I started looking for successful people. I was becoming a better picker. And I started latching on to a couple of people who were successful. And what you have to remember is successful people are not looking for you for two reasons. If you them and act like you're failing, they don't want to hang out with you. And if they even see a bit of success in you, but you surround yourself with dysfunctional people, they don't want to be around you either. So, again, it goes back to accountability. It was about me, and I said, you know what? I don't want to hang around with those people. I'm going to start networking with successful people. Well, lo and behold, as I started connecting with one successful people, he introduced me to another one and to another one, and I started building my network with successful people.
And that's the way to do it. Misery loves company, and that's what you didn't do. You did not hang around that misery. And that's one thing, too, and I was going to say, when it comes to even having children, you got to be mentally stable. You got to be strong-minded. You don't have time to be weak in and out. Or, like you said, playing that victim role. Okay, it's time to man up or woman up and get on with your life. You got a child to raise. You got to show them that this will not get the best of you. And like you said, tell your kids that things won't be easy, but they will work out. And if you're able to be calm and emotionally present, then your kids will feel more at ease to me. You got to believe
it. What a great role model you would be just by your actions.
You got to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kids, they don't really listen to what parents say. They really model what you do. And so, my youngest came up to me and asked me a question and said, you know, why is my mother behaving this way? And most guys will answer. Can explain to the kid why the mom is behaving that way. You shouldn't do that, you know, and vice versa. Because the answer I gave my son was, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know why your mother's behaving that way, but she's the person you need to ask. And again, people get so caught up in the emotions, they start blurting back, you know, stuff to the kid, and it comes to be more confusing. And it's not your place to answer that question. So you have to be very careful when your kids ask questions is, you know, to direct them where they need to go to find that answer.
Right. And that's one thing you don't do. You don't put up in front of them, oh, it was your daddy's fault, or it was your mom's fault. And I like how you said that. Go to the source. You want to know why this person is hurting. That mm-hmm. person you ask, you didn't bad mouth or you didn't say, oh, she did this, she did that.
Mm. You know, and the kids know what's going on, and yeah, the fact that you start bad mouthing only just exacerbates the situation. It's going to make the kids more confusing. So, you know, if you keep your behavior, then you know they're going to feed off of that, and they're not. You may think, oh, well, if my ex-spouse is saying all these things to the kids, they're going to buy into it. Well, they're going to buy into it if you're bad-mouthing their mother or their father. So they're going to be confused, and they're going to sit there and be like, well, who's telling the truth? Well, if you start being honest with them and not bad-mouthing and behaving properly, they're going to give you more clout.
Right. And as one of the celebrities were saying, I forgot her name, Christiana Mullane, she was saying that since her and her man had broke up, you know, she speaks and she acts respectfully towards the father. She never expressed no anger, no outrage, no deep feelings or strong, because she wants her daughter to know that this isn't about them. It's all about her. So, and like mm-hmm. you said, children took their all to listen to us. Especially when it's negative feelings about each other, but no matter what,
well, again,
the other parent. Each other.
Yeah, and also, what you have to control. What I learned to do is I can only control my relationship with my kids. I cannot control my ex-wife's relationship with our kids. And again, that's hard for people to grasp, not only grasp that concept, but to actually behave in that way. Where, and again, you're only going to be helpful to the kids. Back to what you said is that the way you behave is going to affect how the kids are going to behave. And so, you know, if anything, do it for the kids. You know, change your behavior for the kids because that's what you want them to model.
Exactly. Now, Hogan, what do you feel are some of the mistakes for the ones out here in a marriage and on that process? What do you feel are some of the mistakes a person makes during a divorce process?
Well, I think, first of all, they buy into that whole divorce stigma. Secondly, they buy into the fact that they're the victim, and they're the only victim. The third thing, mistake they make is they worry too much about their ex-spouse behavior and whether they care about them. Well, I'm going to use infidelity again because it seems to resonate with people a little bit better. They're like, the person that you married didn't care enough about you to go have an affair. So why do you care what they think or what they feel? I've heard so many people in the divorce process, especially women, and going, you know, how could that bastard have done that to me? Why does he act that way? And I'll look at them and go, like, why do you care how he feels about you? What you should be caring about is how you feel about yourself. Do you love yourself enough to move on? Do you love yourself enough to want to be with someone else better than that person that you were with? It's all about moving on. You know, people, the example I use in the book is quicksand. I don't know if people know this or not, but if you're walking around and you happen to fall in quicksand and there's nobody there to help you, you can actually get out. And a lot of the steps they tell you in order to get out of quicksand can apply to how to overcome divorce process. And to learn more about that, you have to buy my book because it's very complicated. You have to really look at and read the book to understand how I'm using that analogy.
Okay. Well, he says he's not going to give you all details. Now, you really got to go out and purchase to get that out. Hogan said, you're not getting all these details now.
Well, like you said, it's a process. It's baby steps.
Yeah.
And let me just add this to people who want to buy my book. I only want you to buy the book if you want to improve your life. That's the first big step before you even think about buying my book. I'm being brutally honest with you. Please, buy the book only if you want to learn to live and love again. If you do buy the book, I guarantee you it's going to help you.
Right. It will.
And it's also baby steps. And the healing process is different for everybody, okay? People look and go like, well, Hogan, your divorce process only took 7 months. Oh, you healed so quickly. I go, you know what? That doesn't mean it's going to happen to you, okay?
Wow.
How quickly you heal is based on the decisions you make. And I'm not there to live the decisions you make. You know, you're going to make mistakes along the way. But every day is a step towards getting to your ultimate goal.
Right. It is. And like you say, everybody just works differently. So you just have to do what works best for you. Give other decisions you made besides divorce, though.
Oh, yeah. Another unconventional decision, and I'm going to lump this into celebrating the divorce and also following a passion I had that led me to self-therapy, okay? When I filed for divorce, I went out and celebrated. I went on a 3-day vacation, and I didn't know it at the time that that was such a great decision because what it was is I went out and had a good time, and I separated myself from everybody for 3 days. I got to clear my head, and for those 3 days, I got so focused and said, you know what, I made the right decision. I had nobody influencing me at all. And I met some great people during the vacation. I said, you know what? Look, I'm single and I'm loving life here. This is better than what my marriage was. So I came back refreshed with a new attitude. So take time away from everybody. Go out on your own or, you know, go with someone that you can confide in and trust. Okay. When the final decree came, I celebrated again, and I went out and bought a Harley Davidson. I used to ride motorcycles, so I'm at the Harley dealer, and I purchased the motorcycle. I'm in front of the shop. And one of the things that happens to a divorce, as I mentioned earlier, you lose half your friends and you lose a sense of family because now you separated from your wife, you're separated from your kids, and there's a tremendous loss there. And I'm feeling like I have no family anymore. And a guy comes over to me, this really Harley-looking type guy, motorcycle guy, comes over, and he says, "Did you just buy this beautiful motorcycle?" And I said, "Yeah." He puts his hand out and says, "Welcome to the brotherhood." And I realized, you know what? I can start a new family. I became part of the Harley-Davidson motorcycle family. I get on the motorcycle. I start driving down the street, and these motorcycle riders have this ritual where anytime you see another motorcycle rider, you put out your hand to say hi. Well, every time I'm riding down the street, I got people waving at me. I'm making all these new friends. I've got this new family. So the moral of the story here is that through the divorce process, look at yourself and find out what were you passionate about and do something for yourself. Because for 25 years, I've been doing stuff for everybody and forgot about me. I had one woman who said, "Oh, I love dancing." And I said, "Well, what kept you from doing that?" She said, "My husband." And I said, "Well, then go dancing." So she started taking dancing lessons. Well, what happened is when she followed her passion, she took dancing lessons. It opened up her social network. It got her out of the house. It got her to stop thinking about her ex-husband. She started meeting new people. She's in dance contests now. And the great thing about the dancing that she learned, we talked about, is she understood how to set boundaries with men through the dancing. Wow. See, she wasn't setting boundaries with her husband in the marriage. Now she's going into new relationships and saying, "Hogan, I can empower myself now through this dance because I can tell guys where the boundary is, that if I don't want to get intimate with them, I can say I don't want to get intimate with you and not feel guilty about it." And then you're gaining more self-respect for yourself. And the other great thing about the Harley Davidson is it was great therapy for me. Because I could get on the motorcycle. Whenever I got upset about the loss of the marriage, I would just get on the motorcycle and I would just go driving around. I didn't have to worry about traffic. I could drive into the canyons. And I acknowledge the Harley-Davidson in my book because the Harley-Davidson is responsible for the title. Would you like to hear that story?
I sure will, Hogan. I got time.
What happened was I struggled with the title of the book.
Okay.
And I took my motorcycle on a trip for a couple of days. And I'm in the middle of the desert, and the Bee Gees song is, I'm thinking about the wedding vows, you know, "Till death do us part." And so then I put the word "when" in, and I said, "When divorce," and changed "divorce," and put the word "divorce" and said, "When divorce do us part." And then all of a sudden the Bee Gees song started coming into my head at the same time. The song "How to Learn How to Mend a Broken Heart." Well, in the line of the song, the song about "Live Again," and all of a sudden I said, "Oh, subtitle: How to Learn Love, How to Live and Love Again." So I came up with the title as I was writing the Harley Davidson.
I like it. I do. It's different. I do. I like it. Got a little catch to it. That was nice, though. I love it. Now, Hogan, as far as it goes, was it a bad dispute in court when you and her went through this process, though?
Was it a bad decision, you said?
Was it a bad dispute between you and her in court?
You mean was there an emotional battle going on in court? No, not really. She, you know, my ex-wife was more passive aggressive behavior. So, I mean, you really couldn't see the anger and the emotions because she kind of kept it in. So I didn't have to deal with the yelling and the screaming and, you know, a lot of the other tit-for-tat games that went on. But again, the reason that didn't happen was because how I changed my behavior. You know, she had been telling everybody that this is how I behaved in a certain way, and I never behaved in that way. So when I went through the court proceedings and when I was around family, what happened was people were going like, to my ex-wife, going like, where's this Hogan you were talking about? He's not behaving that way.
Right.
And especially when that person wrote that letter, a friend of mine said, you know, you have to behave in a way that they don't expect you to behave. They were expecting me to blow up. They were expecting me to yell and scream, and they were expecting me to reply to messages. One of the things I tell people, and again in the book, is that if you get an email or a text from your ex-spouse that triggers something in you to get you upset, that doesn't mean there's text or the email requires an immediate response.
Exactly. You just play right into it.
You can sit on it for 2 days, you know,
mm-hmm.
and bring your emotions down a little bit, because you have to remember, once you text and once you write an email, it's out in cyberspace forever. And they can use that in court, because what I say is what you say will be used against you, or what you write, more importantly, will be used against you in court. So you have
Why?
To be very careful. I guess go back to what you said. What's the other biggest mistake people make is that they don't keep their emotions in check. And there's a process that you can go through that where you keep your emotions in check. Not every response or every statement that your ex-spouse gives requires an immediate reply.
Right. Oh, Lord, you preaching it right on the spot, Hogan, because I have that habit, and I'm in my marriage now, but sometimes I let my husband just irk my nerves and just let me explode, and he'll just sit back all calm, and I'm like, really? Oh, so you just... I'm looking at him like, really? Okay, so now you're going to be...
Now you can use my techniques that I teach you in divorce to help improve your marriage.
I do. I need to get the book myself, because he'll sit and I look at him like, really? But you started this, and I'm the fool to actually engage into this, while you're sitting back looking at me like, yeah, you're crazy. And I'm like, dang, he does it every time. And you're right. People know how to push your buttons. That's what it's called. They push your buttons. They know what irks you the most.
I know guys in marriages, and some guys have told me is that, you know, that's the they'll do that kind of thing to trigger you because they get a kick out of watching you go off. I don't know why, but for some people, you know, that's not me. I don't like doing that. But yeah, you know, it happens in marriages, not just divorce.
Yeah, like, that's not fun. I don't want to see you get upset. That's just you old sick individual. You're just low down. You're sitting up there wanting somebody.
You know what would be interesting someday? I don't know if you want to really try this, if you want to take the risk. Again, it's an unconventional move. But next time you recognize that your husband triggers you to try to get you to go off on him, is take a deep breath, go sit on his lap, and kiss him and tell him how much you love him and see what happens.
Stop, Hogan. See, that's what that's what it's all about. You're supposed to have that love. And I hope to be married as long as you were in my relationship.
I wish you great success in your marriage. And I know both you and your husband work really hard at it. And, I really want to thank you for having me on the show, and I hope that I've been some help to your readers. And again, if you want to purchase my book or learn more about me, I have a coaching service as well. It's www.hoganhilling.com. And the last thing I would like to say to your readers, for those of you who are going through the divorce process or are just getting over the divorce process or and are in an early divorce stage, is, you know, there is hope, you know. Please, if you want to make a life better for yourself, then pick up my book and read it. And lastly, be free, be happy, and be magnificent.
Thank you so much, Hogan. And I'm glad to be on this show. And a happy woman and your family, too.
All right. God bless you, Takesha. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Listeners, I appreciate you for tuning in today.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.